Hello, I'm Mike Graham, president of Midwestern Securities, and welcome to this episode of Banking on Growth. Today, we're fortunate to have somewhat of a panel interview with some friends of ours at Fairfield National Bank in Fairfield, Illinois. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
To get started, will you guys give us a brief introduction of yourselves professionally and how you ended up in the community bank space? Luke, why don't we start with you?
Sure. Thanks, Mike. So I'm the vice president of asset management. I oversee our investment services division here at Fairfield National Bank, and I'm also an advisor. So I work directly with Midwestern Securities every day. And I got into the community banking space about 4 years ago, started immediately as an advisor.
Jonathan Farmer, I'm our vice president of tax and accounting. We do accounting, consulting, tax work for a wide range of individuals, businesses, nonprofits. Our kind of foray into community banks is probably a little different and unique from most, but we were a private CPA firm, and the bank actually acquired us and moved us under the bank umbrella as a division of the bank now.
And I'm Rich Montgomery. I have been here about 5 years now, and my title at the bank is Chief Risk Officer and Trust Officer, and that was my entry into the community banking space.
Rich, I want to ask you to dig a little bit deeper into your history because I think it's important to this. Prior to your current role, and then prior to that, if you would, please.
Sure. So I started my career in 1983. And worked for the firm that is now known as RSM. Worked there about 3 years for them, and then came back and worked at a local manufacturing company in the accounting department. Spent almost 4 years there, and started my own CPA practice in 1989. And my practice would have been similar to what John does right now. And I sold the practice in 2015 and semi-retired for a little while, and the bank asked me to come back to work in 2019.
Awesome. So our audience can see, we don't have traditional lifelong bankers on the panel today. We've got people with vast experience and history that are bringing a unique perspective to community banking. So I'm thankful for that and thankful for your guys' time to be with us today. Luke, will you give us a little overview of who the bank is as far as the business lines and even into number of branches, assets, deposits, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. So Fairfield National Bank, our main branch is in Fairfield, Illinois. We also have branches in Wayne City and Grayville, Illinois. Fairfield is a community of about 5,000 people. Wayne City has about 1,100, and Grayville is a similar population there. And all of those are within a 30-mile radius of each other. So branches in Southern Illinois. As far as our business lines go, we have our traditional retail and commercial banking, deposits and loans. And then we also have, obviously, with the three of us here, in our departments, we have wealth management, which is made up of, you know, our investment services and our trust department, as well as F&B Financial, which handles tax, accounting, and consulting. As far as our, between our trust department and F&B Asset Management, we manage right around $100 million in assets.
Yeah, it's very impressive. It's impressive in three smaller communities in downstate Illinois having such a vast menu of products and services for your customers. How did you guys get into these lines of business when so many community banks are still just in their traditional lines of business, taking deposits and making loans? Was there a eureka moment that said, "Ah, we've got to diversify," or has this been a progression? And then where do you think this will go for the bank?
Sure. So the trust department has been part of the bank for quite some time. We had it in the 90s. And then we had some form of investment services kind of as a branch off of the trust department, but fell under the trust department realm. In 2014, we joined with Midwestern Securities and launched F&B Asset Management as a separate investment retail investment services division. And then I joined the bank in 2019 to begin my role as an advisor here. And then beginning in 2021, we were tasked with a community survey from the board of directors. And so that community survey was really just a group of individuals from the bank that was just visiting with community members, mostly business owners and key community stakeholders. And the question was essentially, you know, what are your pain points? Are we feeling those pain points? And then what additional services could you see that would benefit you that you currently don't have available to you, as well as what services do you see 5 to 10 years from now not being made available to you locally? And the resounding, there was a lot of different responses, but a common theme was that we were always running into 5 to 10 years from now, we're concerned that we're not going to be able to have very many local accountants. We're concerned about the number of local attorneys that we have as it relates especially to real estate business and estate planning. Small business consulting and succession planning came up quite often as well. And so we essentially looked at those survey results as well as what are our key strengths, what are growth areas and opportunities for us at the bank. And what we found, what aligned was, what if we acquired an accounting firm and then started to wrap these services that came up from this survey to really serve our customers? And so we proceeded in 2021 with the acquisition of the accounting firm that's now been rolled up and integrated into the bank as F&B Financial. And so that's traditional tax and accounting services, but we've also rolled out additional services such as succession planning, such as different consulting lines, such as controllership services, which, you know, John could definitely talk about those in more detail. So we really started to pursue that. And then we were kind of hopeful that there would be synergies between the three departments, but I think we really underestimated what those might be. And so really ever since that, we've just been working together to just learn from one another, hey, where can we be more efficient? Where can we serve our customers better? And so we're just continuing down the path. And as we find more opportunities to serve customers in ways that are unique to our bank, we're just pursuing those opportunities. As far as, you know, where do you think it will be? We just mainly are going to continue to try to grow in that way and just continue to find opportunities to close what we call close the loop on the customer. What we found is that customers receive really a heightened level of service whenever they're all served from one team. And so our goal is to continue to close that loop and continue serving our customers really well.
I love it. And, you know, we believe in that business model. And former Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke believed that banks need to diversify their revenue sources. And you know that we want our clients to have a high touch financial services experience, whether it's investing, accounting, banking, buying insurance. And we think that there's no better place to get those services than in your community bank. We believe that the relationship is closer to the customer, obviously. And when you're closer to the customer, you care more about the customer, you understand the customer more, you're getting the answer right, you're getting the answer to them quicker, and you're making sure that there aren't mistakes and there's less issues in follow-up, right? We're always dealing with employees and customers, and we're human, and there's always the potential for mistakes to happen. But when we're closer to the customer, we're managing the relationship better, managing the risk better, understanding the customer better. The customer has a better experience, which hopefully leads to a more profitable institution locally as well. Can you connect that piece to profitability for the bank, these additional services currently, and how do you expect that to, or how do you anticipate that to change in the future?
Sure. So I think a few years ago, our goal was to be profitable. and really by the adding the additional business lines, it really accelerated that path. You know, from a profitability standpoint, you know, we have a goal of being about 20% of the bank's bottom line. Now that's very ambitious from where we are today. But our growth path, I think will be achievable. So, from a profitability standpoint, it's been, you know, it's been a huge benefit, especially during times whenever, you know, banks have been under pressure as it relates to net interest margin and the rising interest rates and the competitiveness against loans. You know, our divisions really pay very little attention to that. And so, you know, obviously at our revenue can definitely be impacted by the market. But it's really, as far as the correlation to other banking services and the revenue and the profitability of the bank, it's really very uncorrelated, especially the tax and accounting fees are very, very uncorrelated. And so, you know, you get the benefit of growing profitability with higher growth in the revenue line items as we continue to build the synergies and continue to grow in our current and new markets, as well as the diversification in this revenue stream is not very correlated, which is a huge benefit to the bank, especially during times that could be stressful from a net interest margin perspective.
To kind of jump in here too, Mike, to kind of add on to what Luke's saying is we've seen a lot of growth in the top line of the revenue from the synergies that we kind of all create together and the ways we can help each other grow our revenue. We've also seen growth in the bottom line because of our efficiencies in being able to utilize each other's overhead to keep as much of that top line as we can. So as we continue to grow and grow together, we're seeing even more growth there. So being able to grow that top line and keep as much of it as possible.
Really good point, Jonathan. Thanks for making that clear. I'm going to back up just a minute. Okay. So I'm a fan of a journalist for Barron's named Jack Howe. Okay. Jack has the Barron's Streetwise podcast. I've reached out to Jack and I've invited him to watch our podcast as well. So I hope that he does, but I really enjoy Streetwise. And then he's on Barron's Roundtable, which is on Fox Business on Saturday mornings and is a replay on Sunday mornings. This Saturday, they were talking about mergers and acquisitions. And they talked about a variety of industries, but they really zeroed in on, or at least I focused on, their discussion about bank mergers and acquisitions. So Jack's perspective was he picked up his cell phone. This is my calculator, but he picked up his cell phone and he held it to the camera and said, you know, community banks, I'm paraphrasing and I'm exaggerating here too, but he basically said, community banks, who needs them? We have enough banks in the country and I've got enough relationships in my life. I don't need another community banker who says it's about the relationship. I can do everything that I need on my phone. And everything that I need financially that a bank could provide has been commoditized and I can do on my phone. So I reached out to Jack after this. I sent him an email telling him that I like his shows and taking challenging him basically on the value of community banks. And again, what I was talking about earlier, the advantage of being closer to the customer, to managing risk better as an institution, to managing relationships better, to knowing your customers better, to caring more about the customers, again, being close to, and for running the businesses successfully with their own money, as most community banks are privately held, and with their, you know, community investors versus the big publicly traded banks that are playing with other people's money. And so I challenged him on his assertion and said, hey, you know, I want to talk with you. Here's our website. Here's our podcast. How can we talk about this? And, you know, we're believers in community banks. We're believers in community financial institutions. Midwestern Securities is a community-based RIA and broker-dealer and MGA. And the reality is, though, Luke and I were talking a little bit this morning, that in 1994, the year that Luke was born in, there was 11,000 charters, bank charters in the U.S. And today there's, you know, 4,600 or something like that. And the predictions are they're dropping to 2,000. And we know Texas and Illinois specifically have the most charters to lose. So the roll-up in Texas and Illinois is going to be more pronounced than the roll-up in the other 48 states. So keeping Jack Howe's comment in mind and seeing what's happened, we believe, I replied to Jack and said, basically, I think that there's going to be mergers and acquisitions and that banks have to evolve their service model. They can't just take deposits and make loans. They have to act like you guys are. They have to be a financial oasis in their community and provide that leadership and act with confidence. And community banks need scale, right? There's got you can't evolve and maintain your competitiveness if you don't evolve your service and your products and create scale, because we know that costs increase for every industry and regulation only seems to go one direction. Also, the cost of doing business increase over and over. So all of that background to ask, why are you guys hitting the pedal on the right when so many of your peers are hitting the pedal on the left and looking for the exit door?
I can address that, Mike. From my perspective, I wish Jack the best. And I would say, though, you do have a decision to make when you're in community banking to either look at it as a commodity-based model where you're just trading commodities with customers or a service model. And if you look at it from a service model, I'm not sure how you can do it well apart from what we're just in the very beginning phase of trying to do here. Our bank has done a really good job on deposits and loans for a long, long time. And so I think from the perspective of his comments on mergers and acquisitions, our customers still depend on a relationship. I was, as you were speaking, I was trying to think over my career, could I think of one meaningful customer interaction that I've had without a relationship? I really can't think of one. And that's a core part of where we live. So I guess we're blessed that we can lean into that model and it works for the people that we serve. And it's also a way, relationally, it's also a way to have your service platform transcend more than one generation where, you know, you're having the opportunity to serve grandchildren of grandpas that maybe you started your career with and becomes a natural part of the model for them to lean into the services that we have and us to serve them.
I think one important thing you said, Mike, that kind of would be our philosophy too is knowing the customer. Mm-hmm. Are there some people that want to just pick up their phone and be able to have that quick access? Absolutely. Are there people that scares them to death? Absolutely. And can they come in and we can guide them from point A to point B or point A to point D, wherever they're trying to get? Being able to have that relationship means a lot. And one word we've kind of thrown around with our group and the bank is turnkey. You know, a lot of people don't even know where to start with, you know, maybe they're trying to build a business. Maybe they're trying to build succession planning. Maybe they're trying to do some sort of estate look forwards and they don't even know where to start. If you don't have that relationship, that's going to be very tough to do, you know, just logging on to your bank website or on the phone. Those relationships mean a lot in those situations.
I think another word that we've talked about a lot that is, it's part of our mission here is just to differentiate ourselves from competition. And one of the ways that we can do that is by offering the services that we're that we are. If we don't do that, I don't think we're going to be relevant maybe even 10 years from now. So this is a way for us to expand our service model, diversify our revenue stream, and overall just serve people better.
I love the vision, and we agree with it 110%. So we think it's a best practice. We think it's the best practice for community banks, and it's the best experience for investors to have financially in this type of setting. Let's talk about integration, though, inside of the institution. How do you integrate it well? So as Jonathan pointed out, we've seen rising top line and bottom line.
Yeah, so I think one of the key things is, for one, is always just be open to evaluation. And just looking for continuous improvement. Because like I said, when we initially set out on this path, we were thinking there would be synergies. And some of those that we sought initially came to be true. But what we found is some of them were where we weren't looking. And so it's continuing to evaluate and being open-minded and be willing to execute when you find an opportunity. That's kind of a broad level answer. Kind of more granular as a takeaway is when you're thinking of the integration, well, one of the things that we've done is really just relentlessly focus on the customer. When we consider customers during their different phases of their life cycle, what challenges are they facing? How can we serve them? And what can we do to work together to answer questions that they may not even be thinking of yet? And the benefit of our different services is that we get to do that before we present it to the customer in many cases. If I'm thinking about doing something for a customer's financial plan, I can call John and ask the tax implications before we make the recommendation to the customer. I can talk to our loan officer to discuss, hey, you know, there are certain things that we're planning on doing here. Is it better to do it this way or that way? You know, what about their cash management situation? What about the risk management situation? Hey, they have a trust document. In your past experience, Rich, what does this generally lead to? All of these different things lead to us being able to work together as a team and present coordinated recommendations to a customer. And in many ways, we've thought about several different scenarios before the customers even thought about it, to provide the best recommendation to them. By going through that process, we continue to find more opportunities to work together. We found training methods to begin to train other departments on our services. Again, we've done that from a customer scenario. We created many customer scenarios and just said, each department, talk about ways you can serve this customer. And then those have just led to more opportunities for us to see how we can do that, different ways departments serve, different products and services that could fit customer situations. And just executing on that over and over again begins to develop a cadence that then can be implemented and scaled.
Luke, let's talk about that a little bit more. So these trainings, these cross-department trainings, how often did you do those before they got traction?
So we did them every single month. And so we did them where every department covered the same customer scenario from a different perspective. And I would say the first few months, you know, just like anything else, you're driving uphill on something that's changing. But what we saw was all of a sudden, it almost seemed like referrals were coming from the sky, from different departments. And we didn't have a formal referral program. We still don't. We actually don't even formally track referrals, but what we were noticing is that our employees were all of a sudden recognizing opportunities with customers. But it was the monthly cadence and just continuing to build over the course of 3 months. Now we're over a year into it. You know, I'd probably say 3 to 4 months, and then all of a sudden it started to begin to get traction. And then I'd say it was really kind of a compounding effect after that. And, you know, we still definitely have work to do. It's definitely not perfect here. We've came a long way. But there's definitely still work to do in ways that we can get better in that space.
Do you have holdouts inside of the institution, or has everybody kind of come on board with this?
You know, I'd say it's not perfect, but you know, and there's always going to be an element of resistance to change. I think one of the things that I would encourage as a takeaway for those that are listening that maybe wants to implement something like this is when you focus on the customer, you kind of, in your customer scenarios that you're training on, there is an internal motivation that is found inside employees, because most people want to, that work here, really do want to serve their customer well. And when we focused on that, you know, they know that even though they may not be providing that service, that customer is better off because of the recommendation that they provided, whether it was just visiting another department or talking to someone else inside the bank. The benefit of focusing on the customer and our customer examples and profiles was that it really related to them rather than focusing on products or services being sold. So yes, it was definitely not perfect, but I would say I was really surprised by how many people really took hold of it and was interested. And we've seen referrals from departments that would surprise banks, you know, back office, bookkeeping and operations type referrals. Right. Obviously, we've got them from different types of front-facing staff. But when you get them from the back office, you know that you're doing something right.
Yeah, those trainings have been very beneficial, specifically for our groups, because as we go through the scenarios, I think most anybody here at the bank is going to know we do loans, we do retail products. But to just kind of have it in the back of their mind, if somebody comes to them and says, hey, I need to set up a retirement plan, they pick up the phone and call Luke or walk down to his office and grab Luke. Or if they need some consulting work done for, you know, accounting wise, they can grab the phone and call me. Things that typically you wouldn't think about in a bank environment. And it kind of gets everybody in the mindset of, hey, we offer those things. And if somebody needs them, we can get them to the right person.
I think that Vince Lombardi said, winning is a habit and losing is a habit. And he expanded that, of course. But do you think that your peers inside of your bank understand how progressive and professional that your bank is inside of your communities that you serve? It's special, right? And I know you guys are all three humble gentlemen, but what you're doing, being the financial oasis in those communities with top performing professionals and a heart to serve, is winning. And it's winning big time, and you've positioned yourselves to continue to win and expand while we see the opposite, like what we heard on Barron's over the weekend. We see so many people giving up and saying, I can't do it. We don't have the talent. One of our guests on other podcast was Ballard Cassidy, the executive director of the Kentucky Bankers Association. He says the number one challenge for community banks is personnel. You guys have a winning team. Do you think everybody realizes how special that is?
I don't know, Mike. I do. And at my station in life, it's even more special because I can look at these two guys and know that we really, really have something special here. I do think our staff, I do think they get that. I do. Luke's mentioned this already, but you know, the push for excellence here is really strong, and that's important. And the services that we're talking about are scarce in rural areas. They're becoming more scarce, but that's an opportunity, not a threat. You know, that gives us the chance to go out and get talent. And if you're delivering a scarce resource, you can usually price the resource so that it's fair to the customer, but also provides a really good profit margin for the bank. And that's where we need to be.
One thing we've noticed, and it has kind of been a thought through the whole thing, is pulling everybody together, having one group doing this allows us to have a bigger reach for bringing in talent, which, like you said, that's not even at the community bank level, at the regional bank level, at the big bank level, talent is exceptionally scarce. So everybody's fighting for it. So us pulling our resources together to kind of create that environment gives us a lot better shot at bringing that talent in.
Yeah. Earlier Rich talked about differentiation. And when we think of differentiation, we definitely think of the way we differentiate from other banks. But we also think about ways that we differentiate to talent. And that is one thing that is unique to working here compared for someone like me, the uniqueness of working inside not just a community bank, but this one. With our model that's partnered with a hands-on RIA and broker-dealer with Midwestern that provides real training and that encourages these types of business models is unique. You can't do, for me as an advisor, I can't do this at a wirehouse. I can't provide this level of service at, you know, the strip mall down the street. That's just not an option. And once you feel what it's like to deliver that comprehensive service to the customer and the experience that they have compared to what they would have experienced otherwise, it's unique. And what I would say is once a practitioner experiences it, they know that it's different. And so while that may take time for us to continue to be able to recruit and grow talent, over the long term, we do believe that it will also differentiate the way we can recruit.
Really good. Something that you touched on is it takes time. You're off to a great start. It's been something that's been building. You've built on the success and reputation of the bank, then into trust, then into wealth management, then into accounting. The board must be progressive and patient. We see a lot of boards have challenges with that progressiveness, that confidence in their future, and patience. I know all boards have unique dynamics, and I don't want to put anybody on the spot that you're uncomfortable with. But is there anything you'd share about the board's perspective of the direction of the institution?
From my perspective, I can give you they're a whole lot more patient than I am. We see all these synergies and all these things, and we get excited about it. And like, man, we want to go do this and do these things. And sometimes it's you know, taking a step back and letting it develop and get there. They've been very supportive of our group and of everybody, but definitely of our group and what we're building and what we're doing, and have been very, you know, helpful. Anything we need, they've been very supportive from my perspective.
Yeah. And I mean, none of this is possible without them. Each time that this service line was developed, there was a risk of getting into it, both from a risk of reputation of it failing, risk of their strategy and profitability and it dragging on the bottom line rather than adding to it. And I would say at times that was true. Where it was dragging on the bottom line, and their patience and resilience through that period of time is obviously being paid off now. And we believe that will continue to be paid off, over, you know, many, many years to come. But their willingness to be different, their willingness to allow for innovation, is definitely unique to the community banking space. And so I'm very grateful myself for the board that we do have that is willing to take the risks beyond what a normal bank would take in order to continue to serve our community as well and serve in adding shareholder value, obviously, to our shareholders.
I would just add, Luke, that we have a really, really good mix on our board between folks that would be, you know, more progressive and then folks that would be conservative by nature, and it takes both at that level to help give governance to what we're doing. I think, though, Luke's already mentioned something that really is important from a board perspective, and we need to say it as part of the podcast. When we got into the area of tax and accounting consulting, that was the result of a community survey. And part of our part of our mission statement is to exceed the expectations of our communities. And so the board's committed to that. And I really think there's a direct link between the community survey results and what we're doing today.
Excellent. And I appreciate your thoughtful answers. And I know some of the questions that I ask, you know, we're not talking about this 20 years after the fact. These people that I'm asking about integrating with staff, they're still your coworkers, and I understand they're still the board. And so I understand that those questions can be a little bit prickly sometimes. I appreciate both, you know, your answers to both of those types of questions. Maybe if we could end on, you know, something that you guys said, referring to the customer. Give us a good customer, an excellent outcome of having that fully integrated customer inside of your institution. Is there an example that comes to mind?
I think anytime we can anticipate what the customer needs before they realize it, and we deliver on that service, that's a win.
Yeah, and we have a lot of those success stories. And as we continue to build, we get more of them. We all know there's so much that goes together between wealth management and tax and trust and wealth management, just kind of all together. And it's so easy now when somebody comes in and it's in my office and they say, what should I do for a retirement plan? And say, well, let's walk over and talk to Luke. Vice versa. People want to talk to Luke and say, hey, what's my tax consequences to this? Well, let's walk across the hall and let's sit down and talk about it. There's so much there that it might not be, man, this was a huge win for us. But a lot of those small wins end up developing into a huge win. So it just being able to kind of derive that value of the one-stop shop for everybody, I think, has been the biggest win.
Sounds good. Well, gentlemen, Luke, John, Rich, thank you for being with us today. I think our audience is going to love hearing this. I think you've shared a lot of insights and experience and confidence leadership to your fellow community bankers and community financial institution leaders out there. So thanks again for joining us on this edition of Banking on Growth.
Thanks, Mike.